Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit Seeker Hour. Spirit Seeker Hour is your chance to delve into the world of your inner spirit. The Spirit Seeker Hour is brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine. Go to www.spiritseeker.com to find out more. And now, here's Cindy Meyer.
Hello and welcome. This is Cindy Meyer and this is the Spirit Seeker Hour. This show is broadcast each and every Tuesday evening from 7 until 9, and we are, this is brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine, which is published at www.spiritseeker.com. And today I have a guest who is very well known. I've heard her name for so many years. It's an honor and a privilege to interview Dr. Jean Houston. So, Dr. Houston, thank you for coming on the call today.
Well, thank you for having me, Cindy, and please call me Jean.
Okay, all right. So, Jean, you have been on the front lines, and I can't remember the first time I heard your name, but you have...
When you were a baby.
I know, not quite. We're not that far apart. But you have been on the front lines doing this work for a long time, and... You know, you're known as a visionary thinker. You've helped with the human potential movement from its inception. I'm sure if I mentioned psycho-cybernetics, you would say, "Oh, I remember when that was published."
Mm-hmm.
So, and on we go. So, I just would like you to share with us from the time you started doing this work and where things are now. Like, you know, 10 years ago, people, you'd say Reiki and they'd be like, what is that, you know, or whatever. And now, don't you feel that things are just finally culminating and people are waking up more?
Well, I think you're right, Cindy. I think there's a tremendous acceleration literally all over the world of this work in human consciousness and the redesign of the human being, because let's face it, that is where we are. We are at the end of one historical era and not quite at the beginning of the new one, but we're sort of grasping with our fingernails on the cliff of the other side, trying to pull ourselves up to a world that will either be one of such horror and breakdown or really a world of really fairly substantial positive and creative change. And because I work essentially in two areas, not just human development, but also social change. You know, I've worked in over 100 countries under the auspices of the United Nations and the Institute of Cultural Affairs and other international agencies trying to help regions, even cultures, begin to deepen into who and what they are so that they can have the leadership, they can have the skills to be able to make the necessary changes in our time. I call that social artistry, human development in the light of social change. But my work began many, many, many years ago in human development, and probably it began because my father was a comedy writer, and we were always on the road following Bob Hope.
You know?
So I went to 20 schools before I was 12.
How fun, though, to
literally
meet Bob Hope.
All
I mean,
over the country. You know.
What a mentor.
Well, if you went to school in Bemidji, Minnesota one day and Biloxi, Mississippi the next, in those days you were in totally different realities. So I had to learn to adapt and to pick up the language, the gestures, the reality structures of so many different kinds of people, and that became a fractal for my whole life, you know, working in so many different cultures. And not just cultures, you know, world cultures, but cultures of the psyche, the continents of spirit in the psyche as well. So I have a kind of very long horizontal existence around the world and a very, hopefully, a deep vertical existence in the human psyche.
Well, and you have written over 26 books.
Something like that. Yeah. I have lost count.
Right. And and you started the the mystery schools, which now they're popping up all over because people are finally awake to, oh, gee, maybe we've done this before, or maybe we can learn.
A lot of them were students of mine who went off and then created their own.
I have
something like 120,000 pages, unpublished pages that come from the mystery school. Because I write, you know, for every mystery school each month, I write a small book. And by the time it's delivered, and it's all typed out, it's 400 pages, so do the math.
Oh my goodness. You're just still just totally downloading information at all times.
Well, you say download. I'm not so sure. I fight for every darn word.
Well, maybe I said that incorrectly. But
I wish I would channel my New Age friends, say, and do you channel your book? Would that it were so. No, I do an enormous amount of research and preparation.
And your new thing that we put in the magazine, you are offering a free global teleconference. Can you tell us about this?
Well, it's really on the awakening of one's life purpose, because a lot of people have run out of standard brand purposes. You know, when your name was Weaver and you lived on Weaver Lane and your kids would be Weavers. Anyway, it's not that far back. That's 700 years ago. But nowadays, you know, we just think of what your parents and grandparents expected out of life. Well, those expectations have collapsed. And we are in a wild new era, a conflagration of both deconstruction and wild reconstruction. It's thus important to train people to deal with this. You know, I work with leadership at every possible level, from President of the United States, you know, to the man who takes care of his leper colony in southern India. And I find that too many leaders, surprisingly, have been trained to be white males of the year 1926. They simply have not been trained for present complexity. So my role has been to train people everywhere, not just in the mystery schools, but in all these different social programs in many countries, to train them to cook on more burners, to expand their sensory and physical capacities, to extend their psychological dimensions, to enter into the mythic, great mythic, turning story that is happening in our time, and be part of the new story, and above all and deepest of all, to find their source levels in spiritual reality. And we find that when we bring people to this expansion of capacity, then they face the world and its challenges in a very different way, and with often prodigious, I don't want to use the word success because that's too blatant, but certainly really feeling good about themselves. Their life proceeds beautifully into what my Sicilian grandmother would have called abbondanza, which I suppose means abundance plus, plus, plus. But the world unfolds and they become very useful citizens of the world.
You know, Gene, you're like a Margaret Mead of the human potential.
Well, you know, I was the adopted daughter of Margaret Mead. Did you know that?
No.
I have a wonderful mother. She had a wonderful daughter, but that was our relationship. And she lived with my husband and I for the last 6 years of her life, off and on.
I didn't know that. No, I did not.
I thought that's why you brought it up.
No, I just, I'm intuitive. I can't help it.
And well, you must be, because Margaret and I were the closest of friends, along with my husband. And, you know, she trained me. She trained me in anthropology. She sent me out all over the world with letters of introduction to tribal leaders or ethnic leaders. She said, Jane, go out and harvest the human potential.
Well, that's so funny, because
and
that's
so
what I heard.
She sent me to a tribe in West Africa saying, Gene, find out. These people seem to have no neurosis or history of warfare, as we understand it. Well, find out what they're doing. Go live with them. So I sent me off to live with, you know, for a while. And indeed, I found out that they were not thinking in our way. I mean, when it was not A, B, C, D, or 1, 2, 3, 4, any kind of rational discourse. On the contrary, when they had to solve a problem in the time I was there, had to do sanitation, they danced it. They danced it, and they sang it. Hey, yay, 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 yay. And then they drummed it, and then they visualized it, and then they drew it, then they talked a little bit about it, then they all had the solution. They were cooking on more burners.
Oh,
and she sent me to Bali, and she says, find out why these people are all artists, and how come they learn art so fast. Anyway, so she sent me to 6 different regions of the world. And I came back with all these discoveries, this was quite a long time ago, and applied them in our own laboratory and research, and this then became, just grew exponentially, and subsequently, because of my work with Margaret, the UN and related agencies got interested in me and started to send me around the world to solve problems and develop leadership in new ways, and
wow.
That gave me access to a great many opportunities to study human potential all over the world.
This is just fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And you know, you've been around the block. To have her as your mentor, I can't even imagine.
She was very tough.
I can see that. Very
tough. She did not suffer fools gladly, and her notion of foolishness was very harsh and large and wide. And she would say things with her ultimate expletive was nonsense, fiddlesticks, with a withering scorn that you wish she had said something even worse.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes the teachers who are the hardest are the most disciplined, and they instill that.
They instill discipline. She would say to me, "Jean, I need a 40-page paper on stress in the next 3 days. You get it." And by God, you know, I did it, and that's what set me into the being able to produce a lot of things pretty quickly. You know, Margaret's demands. But she was also very loving and enormously generous-hearted. It's just that as the adopted daughter, as her regular daughter, Mary Catherine Bateson, is a good friend, says to me, "Well, I got off easy compared to you."
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, okay, this is totally like a different kind of question.
Yeah.
But, you know, recently I was watching something. I rarely watch TV, but I flip channels sometimes. And I landed on the show, and they were talking about the Internet and how it's only been really since 1994. And they were joking about, you know, because at that time fax machines were the rage. And they were saying, "What do you mean we're going to have an address at with an at sign?" And the whole thing. And I looked at that and I thought, that was only 1994. And, you know, with your work and with your global knowledge, how do you feel that the Internet and everything has affected the human growth potential movement?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. You know, it's a double-edged sword because, the one hand, it has created a kind of world mind taking a walk with itself, and has introduced people to so many different ways of thinking and styles of knowing. And it is the precursor of the next phase, or the phase within the next 20 to 50 years, of a planetary civilization with high individuation of culture. That's why standard brand governments and agencies are breaking down almost everywhere. I mean, the euro has gone to pot, as we know. And part of that is that there is this insistence, this deeper movement to a world civilization, but as I say, with high access to culture. Now, so that's one thing. Another thing that I could say with regard to culture, just as in the fourth millennium BC, the great civilizations grew up along the banks of the great rivers, the Ganges, the Tigris, Euphrates, the Nile, the Yangtze. Today, whole new cultures are growing up along the electronic banks of the Internet, you know. And this is it's resulting in both abuse and glory. And we really don't know where it has gone. I had briefly met many, many, many years ago Marshall McLuhan, and he was already predictive of these kinds of things, you know, that the medium is the message, and that the whole medium of the Internet is giving us access to an outreach not just of our bodies but of our minds and psyches that's never been there before. Now, we see the troubling parts of it. We see these kids with transcendental thumbs but virtually calloused by texting hundreds and thousands of times a day. And you wonder, you know, are they really going to connect with anybody? The fact that we begin to live in screens rather than face-to-face. But I think what's also happening is all this high tech is resulting in high touch. Thus, your kinds of programs, Cindy. Thus, schools that are really searching. I mean, one of my main things that I've done around the world is to help schools revamp themselves, put art back as critical to the curriculum. Hands-on, sensory, rich, because if a child is dancing and singing and emoting and engaging and incarnating information and dramatizing it, by golly, they are not going to fail because they're cooking on more burners. So I think that we have this fascinating dialogue between high tech and high touch that is happening.
You know, it's interesting. I had a conversation with someone just in the last 24 hours about Egypt. I was there in 2008. And they said, weren't you just fascinated and aren't you glad you went then? And I said, you know, I was in Luxor and I went to the spa and I had a massage and, you know, the young man who was, you know, giving the massage had excellent English. And I said to him, I said, how did you learn, you know, your English? And he said, watching TV.
Of course.
We went to like some of these remote, you know, architectural, you know, this place and that place, we'd be up and going to Abydos. I mean, we'd be up at like 3 o'clock in the morning in order to get to one of the ancient sites by six.
I know it well. I've been in Egypt.
About 10 times. To be finished by eight before the masses came, right?
Sure.
And the strangest thing, you know, here you are at pre-dawn driving through these remote villages where there is nothing, but on almost, not every roof, but on many of the rooftops, here are these dish like satellites. You know, they're watching TV, seeing all over the world from their small abode. And then when Egypt, you know, when they overthrew their leader, I mean, that's basically what happened is they had such communication.
It happened through Facebook.
Right.
And Twittering.
So this is a whole new thing. That I think that woke up the world more in a different way. I mean, to me it did. It was we need to pay attention because
you can't get away with anything. I mean, right now we're seeing all these sex scandals that come about because people do very stupid things on Facebook. There's no such thing as privacy really anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else, and I think this is going to cause humans to plunge more deeply into their own psyches, which is the great, you know, private place, because otherwise we are exploited and advertised all over the world. There are no secrets. There really are no secrets. Now, that's a good thing in some ways and quite an embarrassing thing in the other, isn't it?
Oh, so I want to talk about, and listeners that are on the show, we are not doing readings today, but in a little bit I will open it up for questions for Jean Houston, and all you have to do is press 1. We'll probably take 2 to 3 questions, but I want to continue with the life purpose because I think people are lost right now. I love the way you
said.
I love the way you said, you know, most people, they're searching. I think, you know, as an intuitive and a life coach, that's probably one of the main questions that I get. How do you, and these are oftentimes people who are very successful by society's definitions, but they are not feeling as if they're doing what they came to Earth to do.
Well, I think it's because they're between eras, as I said. And one era in which they're straddling, they came to do certain kinds of things. It was kind of an ordinary destiny. But now, given the complexity and challenges of the time, something deeper in their psyche is saying, wait a minute, you're meant for something else. And so you have this sense of dissatisfaction as the hound of heaven goes ruff, 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 at their feet, you know, it's time to get on with it. And that's why you have seminars like mine, you know, that say, let's get to the purpose. Let's get to the higher purpose. It really is inside of you. Let us find ways to discover it. Shall I give some a few little tricks to the trade? Would that be helpful?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to mention your website. You're hosting the free global conference.
Yes.
And you can find information at destinyandyou.com. So
that's
www.destinyandyou.com. So, and the seminar
is 75-minute presentation that people seem to be enjoying a lot. And then it leads to, if people are interested, to a 7-week, very intensive course on the Internet, which really turns your life around.
Right. Well, how can it not? And so you talk about a destiny code. Could you,
yes.
Okay, if you could just share with us, what is a destiny code?
What is a destiny code?
And I know the pollen.
The destiny code is the entelechy. Have you ever heard that word before?
No.
The entelechy, it's a Greek word. It means the dynamic, essential being that you are. It means the great, purposeful structure that has been given to you as your birthright. It's the entelechy of an acorn to be an oak tree. It's an entelechy of a popcorn internal to be a fully popped entity. It's the entelechy of a baby to be a grown-up human being. It's the entelechy of you and me to be something very special. So one of the things that we do is show people how to get in touch with this entelechy. And once they, this essential being, felt deeply as personal and as presence. And once they do, then all kinds of things begin to unfold for them. Opportunities. Awakening vitalities. The aha moments. Synchronicities, coincidences. And above all, a sense that they are on track. And this is, and what is called, what we're calling the code begins to reveal itself more and more, and generally fairly rapidly too. So the destiny code is held in the body, mind, psyche as this sense of dynamic presence and ally. And when I say people who get in touch with this entelechy, their life really begins to shift and to mature in extraordinary new ways. So that's what I'm talking about now. The code can vary enormously from person to person. For some, it is a simplification. For others, it's a great complication. For all, it's a sense of the opening to an adventure in life that deepens their experience and sheer ebullience and delight in living, and also offers them the opportunities for a much greater usefulness. And often this involves some retraining, as you can imagine.
Right. I love the word entelechy.
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 E-N-E-N-T-E-L-E-C-H-Y.
Wow. It's almost like intelligence and then a key to intelligence.
Yeah.
It's just, I love words that are like onomatopoeias, like the gloman,
yes,
you know, that
yes,
just
yes,
says it all. You say the gloman, and even if you don't know what it means, you think of a glow and a sun. So I'm always fascinated with languages. So, we could talk about so many things. I'm going to let you decide where you want to take this next because, you've written 26 books. And here you are now teaching in a whole new way. And you mentioned the radio show. I had a traditional studio radio show for many years. And then the station was bought out. And then I just took a hiatus. And at that time, a few different people would want to be on, they would call and things. And I said, I let that go. And then I was toying with being on an internet radio station. And I resisted it for a while because I thought, there's no way to measure how many people are listening. There's no way to know who you're reaching. And the publicist, actually, that I worked with at that time were like, no, our authors normally like to have a tangible paper where people are reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is how much that has changed.
Yes.
I had a show last week, and I had emails after that show from Ireland, Australia,
yes.
I forget where else. And then I interviewed an international leader from India, a couple of months ago. She had 14,000 people on her email list. I have listeners from all over the world, and what they do, because of Blog Talk that you're on now, this is a virtual blog, which is fascinating. So after the show tonight, anyone listening or anyone who missed the show knows from Spirit Seeker that they can go and listen to it. So the teacher from India had some of her teachers who loved her interview so much that they then would sit and play it through their computers and have 75 to 100 students listening to the interview.
Well, that's the way we're going, isn't it?
It's like we're all one touch away.
Yes.
And it's almost like, to me, the old Winston Churchill and different people, the fireside chats, like mm-hmm. Roosevelt. Doesn't
Roosevelt,
it feel that
yes.
way?
Yes, yes. I knew her, too, Mrs.
Did
Roosevelt.
Really?
I knew her very well.
Oh.
My father was Dad's Roosevelt's joke writer. But I knew her because I was president of my high school when I was 16. And she lived just 5 blocks from my high school in New York. And she gathered all of us young people, young presidents, together to get us interested in the U.N., and, she said, what you don't do is what is destructive. You have to, really do what you can do to make a difference. And then she turned to me and she said, my dear, I rather suspect you're going to have a most interesting professional career. But remember, my dear, you know, as a woman in this time, you can expect to be trashed. Now, she didn't use the word trash, but it was something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, too, my dear, that a woman is just like a tea bag. You put her in hot water, and she just gets stronger.
That is beautiful.
Which I have found to be sadly very true.
Well, you have just had, what a life you have had.
Well, that's why my autobiography is called A Mythic Life. You know?
Oh, that is just fabulous.
And that has all the Margaret Mead stories in it, by the way, also.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, all the different books and, you know, and what is Evolving Wisdom exactly? This is your newest, you're a teacher on their
Evolving
staff.
Evolving Wisdom is a very fast-growing company that is devoted to evolving wisdom, to bringing together some of the more interesting thinkers and teachers of our time to in intensive programs, 7-week programs, 12-week programs. Each program is like an hour and 15 to an hour and a half, and in which very deep inspiration, training, exploration, exercises are given. It's like a kind of mini university, and it's hugely successful. So I launched part of it after the founders launched it, and then I was the first person who was not one of them. And because we had such a response to this course that we're talking about, Awaken to Your Life Purpose, mm-hmm. that more and more people like Neil Donald Walsh and Marianne Williamson and people like that have just come in,
mm-hmm.
or Ford, offering very different kinds of courses, but courses there are, I mean, for what they're offered, they're very inexpensive because you don't just get the 7 weekends, you get live Q&A every week.
Oh,
I have to
goodness.
Be somewhere, regardless where I'm in the world, I have to stop everything and be on these hour and a half, hour and 50 minute Q&As. And also you get all kinds of bonuses and extra lectures, and it's a forums, you get to be with people in almost on a daily basis if you want, in forums where you explore things, you're given exercises to do and practices. So it's very intense, and people claim, well, I get enormous numbers of letters about it, and they say that it's one of the most effective things they've ever done in their lives, turning them around.
It's just people, mm-hmm. you know, people want to connect. I just spent this last weekend in Chicago with the Celebrate Your Life conference, and
yes.
they're, you know, I've supported their event in Chicago for the last 5 years.
Yes.
And I, you know, it was very interesting. I experienced Marianne Williamson and Carolyn Mace this weekend.
Yes,
and
it's wonderful.
And both of them mm-hmm. are doing work that is not easy for the for everyone to how do I put this? Yes, that's a good way to put it, because Marianne Williamson, you know, has always been known for her work with Course in Miracles and et cetera, and she has taken on weight loss. And
yes, she told me that.
Well, and you open a can of worms when you start talking about weight. So imagine 2,000 people in a room and tiny, tiny little Marianne Williamson who probably, you know,
doesn't weigh too much.
You know, I mean, she's a ball of fire. Yeah. She probably looks at eating as, do I have to do it really? No, okay, I'll do it. No, I'm teasing. I know she enjoys eating, but that's not the point. She's taken on this weight loss because she knows as a culture we're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
The United States is one of the most overweight countries in the world right now. You know, it's and then here's Carolyn Mace, who has not written her book, but she is talking about addictions. Now, both of these rooms were packed because people want to learn how can I do weight loss spiritually, and what can I do with addictions because it's so rampant in our society. So I guess my question to you is, you have traveled all over the world. Do you feel like this is, like, these two issues, addictions and weight problems, don't you think, well, I wanted, what is your take on this, on both of these?
Well, it
issues?
Depends where you are in the world.
Okay.
In America, it's very, very bad, you know.
Yeah.
And if you go to other parts of the world, you don't find it. You don't find it to the same degree in Japan, or in Indonesia, or in China, but it is something that the Western world really has, and especially the United States. I'm not sure. I think it's much less in Canada. But it is something that has become part of the national pathological pastime, I think you would have to say. Television had a great deal to do with it.
I think you're
right. People, I just read a statistic that the average American watches 4 hours of television a day. Now, at least 2 hours of that, he or she should have been moving, meeting friends, doing all kinds of things, and they're not.
Right.
It's the sheer horrendous passivity and not moving for which we have not evolved for not moving. You know, we have been made to use our muscular, use our bones, and so this has resulted not just in the eating issue, but also in the addiction to consumption of one kind or another, be it drugs or sex or interesting visionary vegetables, you know, or anger or whatever is the addiction form.
Right. So, how do I word this? When you've traveled in all these different cultures, like you mentioned Indonesia, you mentioned, you know, because Thai food is loaded with coconut milk. I mean, you look at so it isn't that part of it. It's a much bigger. And, you know, Japan, you know, has one of the lowest incidences of breast cancer because they just do. They're very healthy. And when a woman is pregnant in Japan, they give them bus tokens. They give them free clinic. Everything is provided for. They cherish the children who are the future.
Very much so. Whereas we've had latchkey children and children who essentially have been had two parents working and have not had the nurturing that is really required. You know, in other societies, you have an extended family. If your mom and pop aren't around, you've got auntie and uncle and cousins.
Right.
And you live with them as well. This whole notion of the nuclear family has destroyed the needed nurturing that we need as we grow up. And so these are huge issues. This is why I'm one for, for goodness sakes, we have lost so much, let's gain more. Not in weight, but in intelligence, in consciousness, in the activation of our capacities, and of course, in deep empathy for others and in relationship. And then we have a higher purpose, and by golly, we go out and do it. And then we're not addicted to the same degree.
You know, for you, it's almost, you know, with your family upbringing, the way you were in, how many schools by age 12? How many did you
I think the last I counted, it was about 20. Now, some were pretty fly-through schools, but I did have a very great school that I always returned to, which was PS6 in Manhattan. And that was the great experimental school with the students of John Dewey. So they took us to meet the great elders of the time. So, in fact, I did meet, when I was 8 years old, Albert Einstein, who I remember as having a lot of hair and being very sweet and extremely vague, as I recall.
Oh my
God. I think he had two different colored socks on. But they also took us to meet Helen Keller. And that's one of the great memories of my life, because our teacher, Miss O'Reilly, read to us from that extraordinary autobiography of Helen Keller when she says that as a child she had no concepts whatsoever. She was like a block of wood because she was so cut off from the world, being deaf, dumb, and blind. And her teacher tried in vain to try to help her associate, you know, tappings on the hand with words. And finally, in desperation, she took her out to the ivy-covered pump house, and in one hand she tapped the cold, clear water, and the other she, you know, tapped out W-A-T-E-R over and over again. And Kellen writes, suddenly, I knew,
right.
And that word "water" dropped into my mind like the sun into a frozen winter world, and I understood the name of over 30 things before the end of the day. And of course, she went on to become one of the all-time lifelong learners of all time, as well as the one who helped so many disabled people, marginalized people. Well, with that introduction, we got on the Fifth Avenue bus and we went to, I think it was 67th Street. It was the Cosmopolitan Club. My fourth grade class, and Miss Keller came in with her companion, Polly Thompson. Annie Sullivan had died a long time before. And she spoke to us in this awesome voice that had never heard speech. I mean, it was the voice of the Delphic Oracle. It was the voice of the whale. It was the voice of the Sequoia Forest. And I was so moved that when they asked, does any child really want to come up and talk to her, my hand shot up. And I had no idea what I was going to say. And so she placed her hand with her great smile. In the center of her hand, she read my lips. With her fingers, she read my expression. and I blurted out with a child's savage honesty, "Why are you so happy?" And she laughed and laughed and laughed, and her voice was all over the place. "My child, it is because I live each day as if it were my last, and life in all its moments is so full of glory." Life in all its moments is so full of glory. Was she damaged? Yes. Was she damaged? Not at all. She had rewoven the remaining filaments of her senses into a net in which she caught everything. And she, and this, I think, gave her her radical compassion that allowed her to do so much in the world and to learn so much.
Oh, this, you just, I mean, what? Oh, just beautiful. But this is part of your destiny. This is part of your teleque. Could I say
well,
it right?
Entelechy. I think it is,
okay.
You know, it's a fractal. I mean, you and I, if we really wanted to go over our lives, we would find fractals. Mine is that has to do with different cultures, being always in different cultures. I mean, I am Scotch, Sicilian, with a little bit of Cherokee by birth, you know. My mother, Maria Annunziata Serafina Graziella Fiorina Perpetuum from Syracuse, Sicily, marries Jack Houston. I get exposed as a tiny child, as a child, to all manner of cultures in America when before, you know, the internet, before widespread television. So it was like different countries. I go to many schools. I meet many different kinds of people. I'm in the theater. I was in the theater till I was 21, you know, off-Broadway, playing all kinds of the major roles, you know, like the Madwoman of Shiloh or Antigone, you know. And then there was the going to Barnard College, which was all kinds of people from all over the world. My high school, also people all over. Meeting people at every possible level, being given the government assignment. I was one of the first people to explore the effects of LSD on human personality, quite a legitimate government license. And then to do non-drug research, tapping into the depths, the continents of the human capacity, being sent by Margaret Mead all over the world, and from that the UN, and now working, you know, internationally all the time, both in the inner world as well as the outer world. You can see it is a fractal. It's my fractal return. And I find that if you really look, and this is true of almost everybody, though some people find trouble trying to do this, and it's something that I teach people how to do, if you find the fractal return, the inner fractal, of course, is a pattern of repetition with a certain kind of asymmetrical form. So it's the fractal of a cauliflower floralet to be the fractal of the whole you know, cauliflower, of a coastline to be reflected in the little wave eddies on the shore. But if you look at your life, Cindy, you would see that there are these fractal patterns of continuous return, and you find that when you can surf the wave of your fractal, when it comes storming at you, as it almost always will, you tend to have a lot of momentum and spirit behind you. Have you noticed that? I mean, what would you say is your dominant fractal?
You know, I've never looked at it this way, but I wouldn't even know how to answer that. I have gifts in so many different areas.
Would you say it's communication?
Yeah, I would say that. Actually,
as the core fractal, we all have gifts, but
right.
What is the core fractal?
I would say communication because
yeah.
and compassion.
Did it start very early in your childhood?
Oh, when I first started doing the personal growth work, and I resisted so much of, you know, you know, your family is, you know, basically you choose your family, all this stuff. I'm like, I would have never have chosen my family. Absolutely not. You know, I resisted that whole notion.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because I'm more scientific, my background's in science, and then I was working on my MBA when I was introduced to breath work, which took me into an altered reality, and all of a sudden, all the years of talk, blah, blah, blah about issues was overrode, and I connected to spirit in a way that I mean, from the time I was little, I always prayed. I always had my own way of talking to God and the universe. Mm-hmm. And the nuns hated me because I'd say, well, you know, I'd ask questions that were inappropriate, they thought. But I was always thinking, like, well, wait a minute. You know, I had bigger questions. So, You know, I think that, you know, once I realized that my family of origin is what really gave me more compassion and understanding, and, you know, I've always attracted adopted people into my life, you know, mm-hmm. seeking and not understanding things, and because, you know, my father gave me up for adoption, and because he gave me a gift. If I had been raised by him, I would not be who I am today. And he knew that was part of the, you know, helping me to grow to be a healthier, happier soul on this planet, you know, but yet it caused confusion because how can you have someone who loves you and then they depart?
Yes.
So a lot of my soul seeking this lifetime is realizing that there's no real set form. I mean, you have to, you know, your soul will attract to you the experiences that help you evolve and grow.
Yes, indeed.
And once you get that, there's no resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, maybe some, but you know what I mean. It's much, the game of life, as Florence Gobleshin, just gets easier. Because,
well, wonderful, Florence Gobleshin, the game
yeah.
of life.
I mean, she was brilliant.
She was brilliant. That was about 1941, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and one time someone gave me this book written in the, I don't know, it was like 1912, I think. It was called The Science of Happiness. It was this little tiny blue book, you know, just, like not even that many pages, but it was handed to me by someone who had been handed to him, and he said, you know, I think this book's supposed to be yours. And so I'm reading this book, and it talked even then about when people are angry, they analyzed the breath of people that were angry, and
mm-hmm.
the breath was brown and black, what came out of the body when someone was angry and rageful. Then they studied the breath of someone who was coming from compassion and love, and it was a beautiful pink. I mean, how in the world did they measure this back in, you know, 1910 or whatever. But someone realized that when we're happy, our cells are happy. When our cells are happy, our bodies are happy. And it's like, you know, all of this is there. It's all of this is here, but we have to be willing to, like, receive it almost.
Indeed. So you do see the fractal then?
I do see the fractal.
And
I think you're right. It's
communication
and seeking the higher purpose always
and
everything.
Higher forms. So this has been a major fractal that has brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, and every day, you know, is like Helen Keller said, it's like, this is it. You know, 5 years ago I had cancer, and that was like and I was diagnosed in the exact same year as my grandmother that I didn't get to see after age 6 because I was given up for adoption. So, and I knew that was going to be a tough passage.
Was it an Irish family?
No, it was English and Scotch, and then with that side of the family. And it was no one other than her ever had breast cancer, so it was like this
yeah.
odd legacy for me to have it from my father's mother. But it drew me back to that whole side of the family to do more work
mm-hmm.
and have more compassion. That wake-up call was, okay, Cindy, you better get back on the front lines and stop this nonsense. I was grieving a death of my mother and a divorce. And I just took some time, and no one else really knew I was grieving because I've always been a highly functioning person
mm-hmm.
despite what was going on in my life. But I knew when I had to figure some things out and change.
Well, you were born a very strong spirit, clearly.
I would say.
And you were honed in the fires.
Yes, at a young
trauma
age.
That then made you stronger.
Right. Hmm. And so I don't, you know, I mean, there's, So yes, I think communication, and I think seeking the wisdom and understanding of life. Like, you know, like there's just such, you know, when people talk about acupuncture, that new method, you just laugh, you know. And you know,
you mean that 6,000-year-old method?
Just like, what planet are you from? You know, but it's like, you know, and the first time I chanted in Sanskrit, I didn't know what the words meant,
mm-hmm.
but I know how they made me feel.
Yes, yes. The bijas syllables that are thought to be the very syllables that are the energies of creation.
Right. So it's a fascinating world, and, you know, I'm so glad you're doing these classes. I had barely heard about that, the evolving wisdom. It's been on my radar outside there, but not, and I actually think that I know I've seen it, and they're doing really good work.
They're doing very good work, and, you know, their outreach is, when they send out an announcement, like, when they sent out an announcement about me, I think it was 2 million emails.
Right.
So they have really learned the dynamics of this whole new way of outreach and educating people all over the world. And, you know, it's interesting because I get all these letters from people who are in tiny little villages in the middle of New Zealand, say, or wherever they are, and they are hungry and thirsty for this kind of knowledge, which because they're not in the big cities.
Right. And, you know, and now it's just, you know, it's all available.
It's all available.
Okay. So, listeners, as I said, we are not taking readings. We are taking questions for this brilliant mind that we have sharing her wisdom with us today, Jean Houston. So if you do have a question, we have time for one or two questions. And sometimes I know everyone's like, no, keep talking. So if you are wanting to ask a question that you're just like burning to ask, press 1 on your phone, and Nate, my producer, will bring you on. If not, we are going to keep going. So Nate, do we have anyone with a flag up at this point? Do not hear Nate here, so that, okay, he'll let us know if there is someone. Okay, so Jean Houston. Oh, we're almost out of time. I can't believe the show has gone by.
It has gone quickly, hasn't it? We've had a good time.
So you know, what would you like to share with us? I mean, you have so much wisdom.
No, I think it's more interesting if you ask me a question that is so far out and odd that you'll stun me.
Okay, I want to go politically for just a moment.
Okay.
This is not my strongest suit.
All right.
Okay, we don't have to. But
no, go ahead.
It's just, okay, so like what we talked about, you know, Marianne Williamson brought it up about, you know, the thing that just happened with Weinstein and all the stuff, and now
yes.
John Edwards and all this. You know, and don't you, I mean, it was explained to me that whenever you're going to a higher collective consciousness, you know, the light will bring out the dark. And it's just one extreme, you know, it's just the
opposite. That is generally true. I have often found that the people with the most light are dragging often quite a large shadow behind them.
Right, this wonderful shadow work.
Yeah.
So what do you see politically, what do you see as, you know, like Bill Clinton, it's my understanding with all the work that he's done since he left office, it's like he's done more work since he left office with gathering the, you know, it's fascinating to me that he has the political heads of all these different countries that support his work that he's doing.
Yes, yes.
Do you know much about that? Would you like?
Well, I know them. I used to know them very well because I lived in the White House with them.
Yes.
You know, you may know that. I helped Hillary Clinton write a book called It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. I spent a great deal of time with them, much more with her than with him. Bill Clinton is an untrained shaman. He has many, many qualities, many qualities. And, you know, he's also, believe it or not, a very good man. And who has a certain shadow, which we all know about. I actually said to him around 1995, you know, if you don't start dealing with these uneducated parts of your psyche, you're going to take this country to the world's longest puberty rite. Oh, Janie, I don't want to hear that. He starts to leave the room, and Hillary says, Bill, you sit down right now and you listen. But it is certainly true that to be in high office is to be in a state of being trashed all the time. I once asked Hillary, I said, Hillary, how can you stand your life? How can you stand your life? You are constantly getting these toxic barrages against you. How can you do it? She said, well, Jean, it's because I think every day of all the people and all the things that I am so deeply grateful for. And I just practice, and I'm aware of the gratitude, and that's what keeps me going. And that was one of the best things I'd ever heard in my life, because when you're around them, you just see the horrible things that come after them.
Oh, I know. But, you know, he was interviewed, and I just happened to see this interview, and, you know, it's since he left office. And, you know, he has the office in Harlem, and
he does. He's done great and good work.
I know. And so one of the interviewers asked him some ridiculous question about, you know, the craziness that went on. And he actually became angry. It was like that Shakti. I mean, I'm an untrained shaman. That is like the perfect description
for
him. Well,
the thing is that so much of his life now is given to great and good work. He has helped so many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. He goes into these dark and horrible places, and he finds out what needs to be done, and then he organizes the resources to do it.
Right.
So when he is spending, let's say, 16 hours a day doing those kinds of things, and then somebody comes back from something way in the past that he's long since, but you can see why he would get angry. He wants to talk about the big issues and the deep things that he's doing. We go through different lives. We die to one life, and we're born to another one. I don't mean as reincarnation. I mean,
no, I know. We reinvent ourselves several times within one life.
And he has done that, and quite beautifully. So I can quite understand why he would say that. Both of them I found to be very generous, good-hearted, and extraordinary people. And I voted for her, by the way, only because I thought that, well, with the rising of the right wings, that she had more wherewithal, so much more experience to be able to deal with this, what she's going to meet. You know, I always feel very sad for Mr. Obama and can say prayers for him every day, you know. But the thing about both of them, or any, I work with leaders of that level, you know, all over the world.
All the time.
And it is a very awful situation to be in. You have to have the, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt once said, if you're going to be a woman in the world, you have to have the skin of a rhinoceros. And if you're hypersensitive the way some of us are, you know, it's a constant bludgeoning. So I have nothing but deepest respect for both of them. With regard to the question of the scandals, I don't know if you know the recent study, the study which shows that as a man moves into power, his testosterone levels rise.
No, but that would make sense.
Yeah.
And we seem to have a testosterone problem in our country, too. Every other person, you know, it's just...
Well, part of it is diet, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is. But, okay, we just have a few more moments.
Sure.
Okay, so the political thing that I wanted to bring up is exactly what you just said. You know, all the work that's being done behind the scenes that people do not even realize is being done.
Yeah.
And, you know, what...
It's also a different world. Let me extend it. It is a much different world than what shows up on the media. How's that? Look, what I'm finding around the world, who's doing all the work? 80%, 70 to 80% of the people who are making the difference, who are calling in the projects, who are educating the young people, who are making things happen, because I deal with the Millennium Development Goals all over the world, are women of a certain age. Nobody knows that, but we do know about it in the UN. They tend to be, postmenopausal zest is no mere metaphor, but it's these women who have had their children and who are out there and really are not afraid for themselves, and they're making the difference. And they are the ones who are elevating the men to their full potential.
Well, you know, I live in the USA, as you know, and I watch the BBC News. That's
yes.
where I love watching the BBC News.
Yes.
Because to me, it's just so much more accurate, so to speak. I don't know, maybe not, but I just love it. I love their take.
Yes.
Okay, so... In closing, I want to mention again, you've been listening to wonderful, wonderful scholar, philosopher, and author, visionary thinker, Jean Houston. This is Cindy Meyer. This is the Spirit Seeker Radio Show. You can find out about the radio show at www.spiritseeker.com. If you have listened to this and want others to listen, it is stored at blogtalkradio.com/Cindy Meyer. But if you just go to the Spirit Seeker site and you click on the Blog Talk icon, it will take you to the site. All of the interviews that I've ever done are all stored there. It's absolutely wonderful. We interview different authors and visionaries every single week. The other thing I want to mention is Jean Houston will be teaching 3 keys to discovering and living your true purpose. And this is being hosted at destinyandyou.com.
Destinyandyou.com.
Yes, destinyandyou.com. And you can find the wonderful article about awakening to your life's purpose in this issue of Spirit Seeker, which is on the website on page 5. And just, you know, I just want to say what a miracle it is, all of this, you know, this coming together. I really feel like Blog Talk is like a fireside chat, and I remember, you know, like hearing as a child, you know, about everyone gathered around the radio, and yet, you know, and I grew up in my grandparents' home. They never would have a TV because they said if we have a TV, no one will talk, you know. And in my grandmother's house, there was never a TV, and she listened to the radio. So I grew up this way, and I just feel like we're getting back to it. And this is really the touch that you're talking about that has to be added to the technology. So there it is. So, Jean, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Cindy. What a pleasure it is to
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Thank you. And listeners, I will be here again. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much, Jean.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Spirit Seeker Hour is brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine. Go to www.spiritseeker.com to find out more. And now, here's Cindy Meyer.
Hello and welcome. This is Cindy Meyer, and this is the weekly Spirit Hour, Spirit Seeker Hour. And this week has been a two-hour show. Our first guest, as you, if you were able to listen in on the first part of the show, was Jean Houston, who is an amazing, I call her the anthropologist, motivational speaker. So if you're just joining us, we're going to now go into our second part of the show. And tonight it is my pleasure to welcome Sarah Yardini. And then Sarah, if I mispronounced the last name, I apologize, you can correct us. But Sarah Yardini is here to talk to us tonight about Kabbalah and what it means and how we can use the ancient teachings of this. And we also have Rick Bernstein, who is the St. Louis coordinator for the Kabbalah Center, and he has worked with me in regards to this interview and the article that you can find in this issue of Spirit Seeker, which if you go to spiritseeker.com and you go to page 15, there's a wonderful article by Sarah on creating your relationships and how to use the Kabbalah to do that. So, Sarah, welcome to the call.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
Okay. So I know you've been doing this work for quite some time. You've been studying for 21 years under the leadership of Kabbalist Rav and Karen Berg, who are the directors of the Kabbalah Center, which is a nonprofit international organization. So this has tentacles going all over, and we'll hear about that tonight. And basically, the Kabbalah Center, it's my understanding, is dedicated to sharing the wisdom of the Kabbalah to remove chaos and create a better life and a better world. And Sarah is very busy. She's a wife and a mother and has lectured all over the world, including London, Los Angeles, and New York. And she will be in St. Louis on June 26th teaching a class. So, Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I'm very excited. This would be my second visit to St. Louis.
Okay. So I thought I recognized your name from before. And, you know, because I've been following what the group has done, and it's grown in St. Louis. But why don't we just start, you know, if we may, with just what exactly is the Kabbalah? Because, you know, we've had different people publish articles, and I've read books, and I actually had a Kabbalah reading one time when I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so if you could just give our listeners an overview of what the Kabbalah is.
Okay, well, Kabbalah is an ancient spiritual universal wisdom. And the goal of those teachings is to teach every person how to truly receive long and lasting fulfillment in our life. The word Kabbalah means in the Hebrew language to receive. And it teaches how to receive true fulfillment, everything that every human being anywhere in the world would like to receive in our life. All those things that are such as love and health and freedom and meaning and peace of mind, all those spiritual things in nature are taught to be received by Kabbalah. It's a system. It's a very practical spiritual system. It predates religion. Therefore, every human being everywhere, anywhere around the world can study Kabbalah. And it's very practical.
So how is it that you became drawn to this personally?
Well, I was an 18-year-old in Israel at the time and facing many decisions, just about to go to the Israeli army, thinking what life is all about and what I want to do in my life, asking many, many, many questions that all of us at one point or another asking about life and meaning and death and soulmates and why things happen and why bad things happen to good people and all those big questions. And a friend of mine gave me a book that was written by Kabbalist Rav Berg, and that book was The Wheels of a Soul. It was a book that described the process of our journey, the journey of the soul, about reincarnation. And basically, I had this book with me, took it with me to the camp, to the army camp, to the training camp. 2 days later, it was stolen from me. But just the fact that I had the book and read the content of this book had made me change my entire life. I was offered an exciting career in the north of Israel to train men, or I had another option to start to study Kabbalah and take an office position in the army in Tel Aviv. At that time, there was only one Kabbalah center in Israel. And having that book and seeing that wisdom, the answers to my questions were available for me to connect with, had made me choose a more boring army career, but I've started my spiritual path.
And you were 18 years old.
I was 18 years old.
Wow, that's just amazing. So this book changed your destiny.
Absolutely.
And here we are 21 years later.
21 years later, married, 18 years married, and 5 kids later.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, this, where did the book come from, the Kabbalah teachings? Where were they? I mean, you're saying they're predating the Bible, predating all
right.
religion as we know it. So where did it come from? I mean,
it's divine knowledge. And the first book, the first writing that we know of is a book that's called the Book of Formation, the Book of Abraham. And it was written about 4,000 years ago. That's the first Kabbalistic text. Later on, we know about the teachings of Moses, and Moses did not bring religion. He brought wisdom. It was the time before there were Jews, non-Jews, Christians. It was combinations of souls that were there that are called Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with religion. It was an ancient wisdom, basically pathways, ways of thinking, ways of behavior to connect to the Creator, to connect to the light, to connect to the meaning. And about 2,000 years ago, there was a book that was written by a Kabbalist in the name of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and that's the main text of Kabbalah, as it's known. It's called the Book of the Zohar, the Book of Splendor. For thousands of years, this information, this wisdom was hidden. It was maybe a handful of people in every generation were able to access the wisdom. And since, I mean, we all realize that we are all experiencing a big shift in the world with everything that's happening. And also, the wisdom became accessible.
Mm-hmm.
It's through the work of Karen Berg, mainly Rav Berg and Karen Berg, who have made the wisdom accessible for every person who truly wants to become more enlightened and improve their lives.
You know, when I look at the scroll on the website, which, by the way, is www.kabbalah.com, and that's spelled K-A-B-B-A-L-A-H. When I look on, the tablet with the teachings, I mean, it looks just like Hebrew.
Yes, it is. Hebrew.
But I mean,
they are Hebrew letters.
Right. I mean, it looks just, but it's from the Aramaic language. But it,
right.
But it looks, I mean, my son just had his bar mitzvah last year. And when I look at this, I'm just like, it looks just like what we studied for many years to learn, you know, for his service. But, you know, and then there's an astrology component to this, is there not?
There is astrology, there is a meditation component, there's a reincarnation component. It's a very deep, deep, deep study. I just want to go back to the fact that you mentioned the Hebrew letters. very much associate Hebrew letters with Israel or Judaism, and according to the Kabbalah, the Hebrew letters are used as meditative objects. They are channels of energy. They are universal. They don't belong to one nation or another. They are a tool to connect to a particular spiritual energy.
So it's similar to, but not the same, but similar to mantras. You know, when we use a this is what I've been told anyway, and correct me if I'm on the right path with this. So the symbols with what you're talking about with the Kabbalah, like maybe if you don't even understand them, just by embracing them and seeing them, they have a vibration all of their own?
You're absolutely right. And we recommend or we use them as in a form of meditation or even scanning, making a simple eye contact with them. When you know which energy is transmitted and shared by each letter or which energy is transmitted and shared by a sequence of letters, you're able to really draw that energy and connect with it.
You know, because I studied world religions, and, you know, with mantras, I actually had a mantra teacher teach in one of my programs, and what he said, and it just was like a light bulb going off in my head, is whether you understand what the word means, it doesn't matter, because you are connecting to the essence of the whole thing. So this is just fascinating. And, you know, I've studied with teachers from different parts of the world, and, you know, when you have a picture, a lot of times it's like people say, oh, that's an icon. Actually, it's similar to what you're describing here. Whether you understand it or not, the sacredness is already encoded in it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. So what with the Kabbalah, how has it affected your relationships?
Well, I'll be very honest with you and say that with it, I am married 18 years and have 5 beautiful children. And without it, I know and I'm certain that would not be possible.
I know, because worldwide divorce is on the increase. You know, in Canada, you know, they're starting to do commitment ceremonies. Europe doesn't like the high divorce rate. It's across the board, every culture.
Mm-hmm.
So how do the teachings of the Kabbalah help individuals maintain longer lasting love in their heart and relations to people?
Well,
especially their loved divine, their loved partner, so shall we say.
Yeah. Well, it's a system. You see, it's the starting point is nothing in life is random. You know, nothing in life is about luck or being lucky or unlucky. It's not about having a certain looks or a certain status that makes you attract certain people or not. It's all about the effort that we put into creating our relationship that's going to make our relationship what they are. And it's also about understanding kind of the bigger picture of life, which rules we need to play by so we can be fulfilled, whether we are in relationship or not. First, as your own independent human being, as your own soul. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what does he do? How do we do that? We basically, I like to divide it to a step-by-step process. Before you get into a relationship, the first step is to start to date yourself. And that means to really explore who you are. What are you doing here? What is your purpose? Kabbalah talks about a concept. We talk about a concept that's called tikkun. Tikkun means correction. Correction. It means that each and every person has his own kind of a spiritual assignment, tasks of certain things, certain transformation that we need to have and create in each lifetime. And if we create that transformation, we can reach our full potential and we can reach different and deep levels of happiness and fulfillment in our life. I need to know what is my tikkun, what is my personal assignment before I share my life or my space and anything with another human being, because once they come into my life, we both have our own assignments, and we need to be ready for those. So I need to know who am I and what's my assignment, what's my tikkun.
So do you feel that what is missing is that the average, let's just go with American, but it really has something to do with American. Let's just go with the average person. Some cultures are more evolved. Some cultures, you know, before you can even get married, there are rituals and classes, et cetera. But for the average person, Sarah, do you feel that they have even delved into the tikkun? I mean, when I was reading, you know, preparing for this, I love the way one of the articles in the Kabbalah says that blind dating, online dating, double dating, we put ourselves through every imaginable uncomfortable situation. Once we get married, it's almost as if it's another item crossed off our checklist. Okay, mm-hmm. Got married, bam. Had the children, bam. Got the career, bam. Okay, now we have enough money. I can stay home and have babies, bam. Or I can work and have babies. It's like all these choices. And so the average person, do you feel that the self-discovery happens maybe like later when things aren't working? Or do you think that the couples that are enlightened, and how do couples become enlightened? I mean, not, the Kabbalah is not known to the average person. So for, and I know there are like over 8,000 followers just on your website. So
yeah,
it's getting worldwide attention.
Yes.
but of the millions and billions of people on planet Earth at this point, what happens when what is your suggestion for, and we're going to hear Rick's story in a little bit too, but what is your suggestion if one person's really drawn to the Kabbalah and their partner's like, what are you doing now? Now what? Do you feel that just by virtue of, you know, as we change our energy field, and I love the way you said we have our personal assignments. You know, we're here on planet Earth for a reason. We didn't just land here cosmically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So do you feel that it's possible for one person to embrace these teachings, and or does it take both partners being committed?
Well, you ask me many questions right
now. I
know,
and you can answer however you want, because Relationships 101 is not taught in schools. It's not taught in households. So I really like what the Kabbalah teaches about. I like everything I've read, everything, you know, that you've shared so far. So I just, what tips do you have for people right now?
Well, first of all, the good news is that if you are on the show and you're listening and you feel that you want to improve your relationship, no matter which state your relationship is right now, you can make a difference. This is the right time. It's never too late. The second thing is to, you know, spiritual teachings is all about creating a change, and the change starts within me, from within. So the first step would say, okay, what can I do to create the relationship that I want in my life? I have to kind of shift from what do I want the other person to do, waiting for them to change, you know, blaming them for certain things that go wrong, and start to look inward and start to be accountable for your own happiness. Take responsibility. That's the first shift. Whether you're 10 years in the relationship or it's your first day in a relationship, taking responsibility to date myself, to get to know myself on a spiritual level. See, there are all kinds of relationships, Cindy. There are ego-based relationship, and there are soul-based relationship. There are short-term recreational relationship and long-fulfilling relationship. So it depends also what do I want. What do I want? It's a question that each person needs to ask themselves. But I would assume that we all want the long-term soul-to-soul level relationship, the heart-to-heart relationship. And for those to happen, each person needs to be on a spiritual path.
I think these are very wise words, and some of the you on the website, if you want to go there, there are the four keys that are important for nurturing relationships. And I think every couple should be required to learn these. They're basic tools and suggestions. But can you imagine if everyone lived by these tenets?
It would be a different world.
So basically consciously focusing on the good in one another is, can you just describe what you mean with this? It sounds simplistic, but let's go a little deeper.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, the tikkun. Let's get back to tikkun. Tikkun means that I'm aware of my good attributes, my gifts, and also my downfalls, and that I'm aware of them. Focusing on the good, of course, I want to focus on the good. Focus on the good, so the good will overcome the negative.
Serena.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Oh, okay. I just thought I heard somebody there. So, Cindy, I kind of lost my train of thought right now.
Well, no, you were saying that we all, with the tikkun, we all have our strengths and weaknesses. We all pretty much know, if we've done any self-analysis, we know where our strengths, we know where our weaknesses are. And what you were saying is focusing on our strengths and the good strengths in another. And, you know, what you're basically describing is unconditional loving of self, being aware, if I may paraphrase, being aware of our weaknesses, but not putting the focus there, because what we focus on expands.
Right, absolutely. And there is actually a tool, coming back to another field in Kabbalah, the tool of astrology. Kabbalistic astrology it may take us a lifetime to get to know who we are. Many times we learn our faults and our weaknesses and our strengths through the relationship, in the cost of not having that person anymore in our life, right? But there's a more proactive way, which is to perhaps get an astrological, Kabbalistic astrological reading. And that gives you the insights into who you are as a soul, your soul journey, even an insight into who you were in past lifetime. Why are you here? There's a specific reason that you're here, and that could be seen and taught through Kabbalistic astrology. So that's a tool I used before I got married. You know, it takes a long time to get to know somebody, but it's easier to get the spiritual perspective of who is this person.
Well, and it's just very interesting, because I've studied Chinese astrology, and, you know, had an astrology. I went to him to see if I should marry my second husband, and he said absolutely not. And,
wow.
And you know, he said, no, this is not good. And I, of course, didn't listen. But and I'm now one of the divorced. But I also have studied Vedic astrology. I've studied all kinds of, you know, Western astrology. I am not familiar. I mean, how does the Kabbalah, you know, how is it different than other astrology? Do you know? Or
the calculation, I'm not an astrologer. But we work with the lunar calendar. So sometimes you could be in the solar calendar a certain sign of the zodiac, and in the lunar calendar you would have a different influence that you may not be aware of. So we worked with the lunar calendar. And the focus is really on your tikkun. It's not about giving you, you know, the future, because we are determining and designing our future by the choices that we make every day. But it gives you more of an overview of, again, the assignments, the gifts, your particular area of transformation in this lifetime.
You know, this is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I mean, because, you know, I love the lunar cycle. I think it makes more sense, you know, and I work with full moon, new moon meditation every single month in my life. I pay attention to the cycles of the moon, you know, and, you know, I've always been fascinated by the mantic sciences, astrology being one. This feels more accurate than almost any system I have found, other than Vedic astrology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. So the astrology portion, so if someone were studying the Kabbalah, and would they have a reading done by someone? Is that what is recommended?
Yes.
Or
yes, they would go to an astrologer, the Kabbalah Center, that is trained, and would have, absolutely, they would have a reading. First of all, they would have their own chart reading. Again, date yourself, know who you are as a soul. And then they would have a comparison chart. So they could actually see what the combination and the union of those two paths, those two souls, would bring to the world and how it's going to affect your life. You're going to see in which area you can help each other's tikkun process and transformation, and where it's going to be challenging.
You know, in the Hindu faith, oftentimes the arranged marriages, a lot of times people think it's just on the alliance of the families, but it's not. They go totally with the star charts. It is part of it. And, you know, in like when children are born in India, it's very normal to have an astrology chart done. Like, you know, Amma Karunamayi, who became quite, and she still is very, very involved with the Divine Mother movement. I mean, they looked in her chart, and at the age of, like, when she was just a tiny girl, they knew that her destiny, everything was in her chart to be a spiritual leader. And it's, so she was raised knowing that this was all in her chart. She was taught meditation at a very young age. So what I am hearing, like, have you done the charts on all five of your children?
Absolutely.
I knew
absolutely.
You were going to
say that. Now, I have to mention something, that the goal and the purpose of knowing the chart is not to live by the chart or by any way to be limited by the chart. In fact, it's just to be guided. And with the tools of Kabbalah, that there are many techniques and tools, we can actually change our destiny. Many times people would do enough spiritual work and transformation, and they would create new destiny for themselves. They may not have children in their chart, but in reality, they would be able to have children. They may not be able to, in the chart, it doesn't show that they're going to have a big career or being able to have a beautiful relationship, but they, through their spiritual work, they can actually create it. And that's a very important thing.
So, well, and I like that distinction because, you know, one of the things that frustrates me more than anything is when I hear someone say, well, I have issues with impoverishment because my south node's in blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, excuse me, maybe your south node is in that so that this lifetime you overcome the obstacles that
right.
you've had other lifetimes. And that's why this has shown up, to help you clear that pattern.
Right, right.
So, but what you're talking about is basically through the Kabbalah and self-awareness, and then having, you know, having that awareness as you enter into a relationship or as you are a mother or a father, to help understand the destiny of your children in the soul level work that they have, why they've chosen you as a parent, basically.
Right.
And so this really is fascinating on many multi-generational levels.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I am just fascinated. Okay, so I want to mention a couple of things. I want to mention that there is a class happening in St. Louis. This is Sunday, June 26th at 3 p.m. There is a discount if you register tonight by calling the 800 number. You'll save $13. The price will be $39 instead of $52. So that's quite a savings. And the phone number is 1-800-522-2252. I'm going to mention that again. It's 1-800-522-2252. You can also go to the St. Louis Kabbalah Center.org website, which is spelled STLKABBALAHCENTRE.org. And Rick Bernstein Sarah, is it all right if we bring Rick on now?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Rick, are you there?
Hello. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, great. Welcome to the call. And,
you
know, Rick, is there anything else you want to tell us about the workshop on Sunday?
You guys have touched on a little bit about what Sarah is going to bring to St. Louis. And, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity for all the reasons that you've discussed that everybody's relationship can benefit from. So it's 2 hours long, and I've heard Sarah speak at the one time she came to St. Louis. And she's very knowledgeable and very experienced, and everybody will walk away with, as I have just in studying Kabbalah for the very short 8 months that I have, you'll gain so much. You will. I mean, even if you gain one thing that's going to help your relationship be better, you know, you haven't wasted your time at all. So
Rick, would you, what drew you to the Kabbalah?
At the time, it was my soon-to-be ex-wife. And when I say soon-to-be, meaning my wife at the time and I were within days of finalizing our divorce. And my wife, Heather, had been a religious studies major along with getting her law degree. And so she experienced Kabbalah years ago. And in the 6 to 8 to 12 months leading up to what was going to be the end of our marriage, she became much more involved and discovered the Kabbalah Center in Los Angeles. And soon after that, which would be about mid last year, found the St. Louis Kabbalah Center, and she just, during all the negativity and the chaos and the craziness of leading up to our inevitable separation, she handed me some books, and she said, if there's anything you do, it's just please look through some of these books. And I fought it and said, no, and I don't need that, and you're wrong, and what do you know, and blah, blah, blah. And I picked up a book, and that's what brought me to Kabbalah. My wife, who is currently my wife, and I'm so deeply in love with, and has done everything and has saved us. And, I owe her the rest of my life for what she's done, and we can get a lot more into that. And I'm open to answer anything you have to ask.
Well, I guess personally, once you started reading the books and just started embracing it, what is, since Kabbalah is much more self-directed, it feels like, from what I'm hearing tonight, like you take responsibility for your own life.
Sure.
So what shifted in your thinking to help your relationship with your wife? And by the way, congratulations. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. the book that Heather handed me was called Satan, an Autobiography. And it was written in the first person where Satan is actually talking to you. Okay? And it took me reading one very small paragraph, and the paragraph simply said, stop pointing the finger and being the victim and turn around and point the finger at you. And it was this unbelievable light bulb that went off when I just kind of went, wait a minute. So I am so, am I that wrong? Am I that delusional about what's wrong with my marriage and what's wrong with my life and blaming everybody in the world, including Heather, as to this was all her fault? And it just turned me taking my finger and pointing it at myself. Turning my finger and all my blame and my reasoning and my existence on evaluating me and how I think and how I process and how I view things, not blaming Heather for everything, which I did. I blamed Heather for everything. Everything was her fault. She was wrong. She's not doing it right. She's not treating me right. Once I turned my finger and pointed at me, the world completely changed. Completely.
Well, you know that old saying, when you're pointing a finger at me, three are pointing back. Well, I like the Course in Miracles take on this. It says, what we perceive in another, we are strengthening in ourselves. Mm-hmm. So do we want to see the good in someone, or do we want to see the bad? Because whatever we're seeing is magnified back to us. So
yeah.
Those are beautiful. Well, and basically, this is the responsibility that Sarah's been talking about. All of a sudden, you realize that it's not your wife's job to keep you happy.
Exactly.
It's your job to do your soul development, and guess what? I bet you have fascinating dinner time conversations now.
and that's the other thing that I thought, growing up in a Jewish environment where my mother grew up in an Orthodox home, and my father grew up although Jewish, but very, very limited. And I thought I had this great spirituality about me because I went to services on the high holidays, and I was bar mitzvah, and I thought I had it all going on spiritually, and my ego was as big as Missouri. And then when I started realizing this, reading these books and doing more studying and getting more involved and really listening to the teachers, I realized I was so wrong. I was so on the wrong path that I thought was so right. And again, once that train went into the station and turned itself around and went in a direction about realizing the errors I was making and correcting those, once those started to get corrected, Cindy, it's amazing what it does not only to you personally, but it does to your family, your children, the people you interact with on the street, to the the stranger you meet who, normally maybe you may attitude about, or, who cuts you off on the road, to somebody in the store who does something to you and you react. Now I'm so much better at just letting things kind of roll off. And then the other word is that you learn in Kabbalah is restrict. You learn a lot about restriction and refocusing your ego. And so again, I could talk so much about.
Oh, I know. No, you're perfect. This is exactly, you know. So, listeners, what you're hearing Rick share is a personal, very personal, and thank you, by the way, experience of how the Kabbalah helped him turn his life around. And, you know, it doesn't matter what spiritual path you're on. We, you know, I've studied all the different ones. And, you know, even though my son was bar mitzvah, I am not Jewish. But I, you know, this was his path. His father's side of the family is Jewish. And but, you know, I told him, I said, you, even as you grow and evolve and, you know, continue to learn, I said, you will find your own relationship with God because that's your job, not mine.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, each person has to find their way. So thank you for sharing this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Okay.
I mean, I think the other part of, and again, I would really like to put this out to men because even in the classes that we take, it's dominated by women. And if I have a part of me or a word that I want to spread, it's to men because, you know, our egos that we were raised in society today are so expansive, and the men dominate and the men rule, and I think that's one of the biggest mistakes. And what can be a real cure for our relationship is when we learn to take that ego and just set it aside, put it down, and let just kind of like the spirituality and this freedom and this light come into your life. Which, and I've never been a deeply spiritual person. I really haven't. And these words that come out of me now, I sometimes don't know where they come from, but I know it's worked. And
you're in the flow and you're connected.
And I will.
And you're awake.
Yeah.
Isn't that the fun thing?
Yeah.
Once you wake up, it's like, okay, no going back now. You know, there's a Mary Engelbreit card that I just love. She has the little knapsack over her shoulder, and she's moving on, and she looks back at the sign, and it says, no longer an option. It's done.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, where do we go from here? So, Rick, thank you so much.
Okay.
So that is a perfect illustration. And Sarah, let's talk just a little more about the workshop coming up. It's called Creating Your Relationships. So how the listeners can understand the power of creation, especially using that energy in their relationships.
Well, they're going to learn that in order for anything to happen in our life, we need to be a constant force of the Creator. We need to be on our toes, making sure that we are initiators, that we are proactive, that we are in a giving position, that we're in control. We're not becoming numb. You know, many times you get into a relationship, and that's the goal, to say I'm in a relationship or I have a relationship, but you stop nurturing the relationship. In order for a relationship to be fulfilling, it needs to be created. Every moment we create it. By every word that I'm choosing to say or not to say, every thought, every feeling that I put into the relationship, I'm creating something, either a fulfilling relationship or something that's empty. But I'm a force. I have to be in a mode of creation. That's why we're calling it creating relationship, because it's not just going to happen. It's not being in a relationship. I mean, I have to be an active force. And in the seminar, we're going to talk about, so before the seminar, we call it creating your relationships, and it's spelled real. Relationships, how to make relationships that are real, long-lasting, and soul-level relationships. I'm going to talk about communication, reactive communication versus proactive communication. How do we approach our partner, what not to say, how to say. And I'm also going to focus on love languages, the different way of expressing and perceiving and feeling love, because we each have a different way. According to our tikkun and our special soul assignment, there are different ways that we each perceive love, and that may not be the same way as the other person understands. So we may do things, and maybe for one person, his love language is to hear, I love you 10 times a day and I miss you. And for the other person, it's more about care. It's more about doing actions to service him or care for him. So they don't care that you say 10 times, I love you, I miss you, if you don't give them coffee.
Uh-huh.
So we we need, again, we need to know what our love language, how do we love to be loved, and then really figure out what's my partner's love language. Most of the time, it's very interesting. When you look at it, you would actually see that the way you like what's easy for you to, the way it's easy for you to express love may not be the way, the primary love language of your partner, and that you would have to change. If you really love them, you would need to learn a new language. You need to learn how to get out of your way and do something that is a, more of an effort for you, for them to feel loved by you.
Fascinating. So, for people who are just so incredibly busy, what is the first step when they're like, I don't have time? I mean, you know, I've been a single parent of three kids most of my life, and, you know, it's like by the end of the day, you know, you're tired, and I'm doing it without a partner. So for two people who are married with children, with both working full-time and all the things that go with kids, what is your, like, you know, what is your best way or words of wisdom for them to get started with these active acts of kindness, and especially the love language? I think that's one of the, you know, when I'm working with clients, there's three areas. It's sex, money, communication.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three big ones in any relationship, no matter what culture. I mean, there's other controls of, you know, like how men are supposed to be and how women are supposed to be. And, I mean, there's so much cross-cultural experience now. But the DNA and lineage of family history and how women related and how men related, et cetera, it's all there. I mean, it's all, like, encoded. So for a young couple who – they've tried all kinds of things, and they just know that they're not as close as they want to be. Mm-hmm. Would they take a class? Would they read a book? Would they, you know, what would your suggestion be to get started?
I would say come to take the class. Come to take the class. And if it's really important for you, and it is important, put effort into it. It has to be on the top of your list. Relationship, especially if you have children and you care about your family, and you care about yourself, and you care about the world, invest in your relationships. It's so important. Make the time. Sleep less. Whatever it is, come to the lecture. It will be the start of a spiritual path. You know, Kabbalah is not a magic pill that you take and everything is going to be good the next day. But it's a path worth taking. And there are improvements every step of the way. The beginning would be the lecture. They would be connected with the study group, wonderful people. You need to have spiritual friends around you to support you, to share with. And that would be offered there in the seminar. If there's a book, if people like to read, there's a wonderful book. It's called God Wears Lipstick by Karen Burke.
I know this book. It's an amazing book. Yes, God Wears Lipstick. Okay. You know, it's interesting at the temple, you know, that we belong to, there's a female rabbi, and she runs the show. And as a matter of fact, there was a senior rabbi who's stepping down. And, you know, it's a very active temple. And when my relatives from New York were in town for my son's bar mitzvah, what they said is if we had a cantor like this, or if we had a female, they're like, female rabbis in New York, you just don't get them. You know, not like this. And they're like, this is very progressive. And, you know, the Torah portion was online and they could listen to it. And they're like, what kind of temple have you? I knew it wasn't by mistake. I mean, it's very loving. And, you know, and I guess the long and short of this is, don't you feel that still, especially in the USA, there's just confusion over males and females roles, and it has to be renegotiated? You know, and I think that that's where a lot of people are just still lost. There's so much traditional programming of what men are supposed to be like and what women are supposed to be like. And, you know, what Rick was, you know, saying about, you know, being ego-based instead of trying to figure it out and coming from heart space with a spiritual connection. It's, I think that's what's missing in a lot of the religious dogma. It's like people are just not getting what they need, and they're seeking and searching.
Right.
So how much do you feel that the that men and women must really, like, change some of these gender, like, programs? It's programming, because it's just not working.
Right. I think that we need to really be connected to our spiritual purpose as female in their relationship and men in their relationship, because there is a purpose. There is a difference. There's a difference in the way that we, you know, what we call in Kabbalah, there's a difference in the way that we, well, we just function in life, yeah? The man, according to Kabbalah, is more of a channel to connect to the light, to bring the light. And the woman is more of the vessel, the recipient, the manifester in the relationship. According to Kabbalah, women have a tremendous responsibility to manage their relationship and to manage the spiritual level and development of the men. So I think that both need to understand our roles and responsibility spiritually speaking. And that's one of the things in one of the sessions is one of those things that are actually discussed. What is my role? What is my power? What is my true power? Not what society says.
Right. You know, it's interesting in the Native American tribes when there have been female chief, not a chief, but a female in charge, there has been less wars because the women mm-hmm. traditionally go for peace. And,
right.
you know, but, you know, in so much of the religions, you know, the women just have not been, like I was actually kind of surprised when my former mother-in-law said, oh, you would not see this in New York. I said, what are you, and she lives in Israel. So, I mean, she's used to, you know, the men having more power, you know,
right.
spiritually than the women. And so this is what I'm saying. I just really feel like there has to be a whole new rewiring, you know, similar to what Rick and his wife Heather went through with, okay, what are we going to do here? Are we going to be like the rest, you know, of everyone else, just throw the marriage away, or are we going to see what we can do here? And, you know, it's fascinating to me how people are so lost right now when it comes to relationships. And, you know, when you were saying that, you know, you think most people are looking for long-term relationships, I think a lot of people are so afraid to even enter into them now because they've been hurt and then their hearts are closed. So I like on this website, I want to give this website to everyone, Kabbalah.com. It's Kabbalah.com. On this website, there is the information about astrology, relationships, angel song, and the 27 names of God, which
72 names of God.
I'm sorry, 72. I said it backwards. 72 names of God. Is that not, like, beautiful?
Yes, and you know what? In fact, a very special component of the seminar on Sunday would be a section where we're going to have a meditation, and we're going to use one of the 72 names of God to speak and communicate with somebody on a soul level. Somebody that you know, sometimes you feel like you have no words and you don't know how to reach another person, and whatever you say just comes out the wrong way and rubs them the wrong way and you can't get through. So we're going to use meditation as a tool to actually communicate on a soul level. And in the past I've taught this class and had beautiful results and feedback from people that use that method of communication, and how they actually saw when they contacted somebody spiritually, they actually also got a phone call. One of them was a mother of a child that is autistic that lives out of the home. He's already 19 years old. And the mother said how she feels so disconnected from him and so worried for him. And in the meditation, she basically send him energy and love and use the letters to show him how much she loved him and embraced him. And he answered back to her and said, I love you, Mom, and don't worry so much about me.
Oh, that's a miracle.
It was just a beautiful thing. That was in the meditation. The day after, she actually received a phone call from him.
He got it. This is the whole deal. It's vibrational. And, you know, the Hathors from Egypt, they knew. I mean, they just understood how to, like, communicate whole volumes of things without ever opening their mouth. I mean, and, of course, you know, they're gone, but their civilization still, all the remains are there. It's like these ancient teachings are so advanced. And isn't it interesting that just now we're being shown them, sort of? I mean, isn't it fascinating? You know, and I do want to talk about dreams, though, because, you know, you know, I get books and articles across my desk and emails all the time, and the thing that keeps showing up is Carl Jung and, you know, his symbology. And now I'm reading about the Kabbalah with dreams, and what an interesting take this is. So do you mind talking just a little bit about the purpose of sleep and what happens in the dream state according to the Kabbalah?
Well, in the dream state, according to Kabbalah, it's a state where our soul is being actually travels to a different dimension, pretty much disconnected from our body, so we're unlimited by our physical body. And we can receive messages, we can rejuvenate, we can actually study. There's a whole experience of existence while we're sleeping. Many times sleep is, we're experiencing something unpleasant during sleep, which is also a way to pay off karmic debt. If we have nightmares or something that painful that we feel, it's instead of going through that experience on a physical level, we go through this while we're sleeping. It's one aspect of sleep. But we're really going somewhere. Actually, there's a whole Kabbalistic practice how to prepare for sleep.
That
helps a lot of people, people that cannot go to sleep, that their mind just races. There's a whole Kabbalistic meditation practice before going to bed, how to kind of close off our spiritual work at the end of the day and how to release ourselves from everything that tries to hold us down and connected to our body and let us just take off. And sleep is very important. Important, meaningful dreams. It's very important to know who you're telling your dream, who your dream interpreter is, because Kabbalah explained that the dream would create a reality by the interpreter. Whatever interpretation is given to you, that interpretation has the power to turn the message in the dream to a reality.
So I'm just going to read a couple of sentences from Life is But a Dream. It says, when the sun is set and the stars spatter the heavens, part of our soul leaves our body. Even if we remain awake, part of the soul still departs, which is one reason why we begin to feel more tired and drained as night unfolds. During actual sleep, the Zohar explains that 59 of 60 parts of our soul have now left the body, leaving only 1/60th to sustain us physically.
Right.
That is fascinating. And it says, when the body is in slumber, the chains of physical existence are suddenly broken, and the soul is now free to ascend to a high place in the spiritual atmosphere where it receives nourishment, power, and the occasional oil change. So I couldn't agree more, and I think that if you could probably have them lined up at your doors just teaching people how to meditate so they can sleep. I am serious. If I see one more commercial for sleeping pills, but oh, look at the side effects. It's like, why would anyone take one? But that's fascinating. So even the dream state was addressed with these ancient teachings.
Absolutely. Every part of life is addressed by the teaching. Every part of life.
That's just amazing. Okay, so let's talk about love. I know we've talked about it, but what does the Kabbalah say about love?
Well, you know what? There is another area in Kabbalah that we haven't spoken about it yet, and it is numerology. You probably are familiar with it, right?
So I am familiar with American and Tibetan numerology.
Okay. In Kabbalah, we use the Hebrew letters, the Aramaic letters, and each of them has a value, a numerical value. Many times we learn about the real essence and energy in a word by its numerical value. So we talk about love, we take the word love and its numerical value is 13. You take the word care in Hebrew, it has the same numerical value, 13. And you take the word one and it has the same numerical value, 13. And here you have a new lesson about what is love. Love is about care. Love is about oneness. It seems simple, but really, many times in life, we mix between love and need. We say, I love you, and we really mean, I need you. And this is one of the reasons that my relationship break, because once I get into relationship thinking that I love somebody, really I'm coming and I really come from a place of need, when that my need is not going to be fulfilled anymore by that person, I could, you know, I don't love him anymore. Why? I don't know. Maybe he doesn't provide me the financial security I wanted to have. Or maybe I had a need to be listened to and he doesn't listen to me anymore. And here's a lesson. One lesson of how to improve our life is to shift from coming to relationship from a place of lack, I'm needing something and you're going to give me and fulfill my need, to a place of sharing. I'm actually here to share with you. Love is about giving. Love, true love is about giving.
So with this numerology, I'm fascinated with this, because in traditional numerology, that 13 would become a 4.
Mm-hmm.
In Tibetan numerology, it goes until 12. I have never heard a system that goes to 13.
Mm-hmm.
This is advanced. This is, am I right? This is like the Kabbalah has, I mean, it's a different numerology system.
Yeah. It's very deep. It's very, very,
I can
very
hear that.
Deep and very advanced. And it's been so concealed for so many years because we as humanity weren't ready for that type of knowledge.
So this is just absolutely fascinating. And, you know, with the numerology in the Jewish faith, can you, you know, explain like the 36 and the 27 and the 72? It's like the vibration of 9. Is there anything with the Kabbalah that addresses how everything's 9 completions and new beginnings? And is there anything addressed with it? Like even in the Hindu faith, there are 108 steps to the temple, 9. There are 108 prayers that you say with the prayer beads, 9. In feng shui, there are 9 areas of the Bagua. And when you have a Kabbalah reading, it's my understanding that there are 9 areas of your life that are addressed.
Well, there are the 12, I don't know about Kabbalah reading. I know about Kabbalistic astrological reading, and that's just
okay.
12 houses. But it will be it's more than 13. It depends on the combination. What we're looking for is connection perhaps to the names of God for different sequences of letters and numbers that are channeling different vibrational energy of the Creator. And that's a bit too complicated and deep. I don't want to get anybody confused by that.
Okay, we won't go there. But numerology is part of the Kabbalah.
Numerology is a part of Kabbalah. It's a fascinating part. But for the beginner, it's very practical. It's very practical spirituality. New concept that you can apply immediately to your life. Every small shift that you're going to make in the way that you feel and think would take you to a new destination in your life. Even though we may have done things in a certain way for many years, but the power of Kabbalah is the power to change.
Which is what life is all about, you know, when you're present and everything else. So that's, you know, that's a good summary of everything. Personal responsibility, doing your own spiritual growth work, and doing your own dialogue with self to figure out where you are. And then this other part is your own spiritual path. Like, you know, whether you're in a relationship or not, you have your own personal journey. But, of course, it's strengthened. And I really like how there are study groups, you know, because that keeps people connected to the process.
Absolutely. And we have unique tools. We have unique tools. We have wisdom. We have techniques. We have books written. The knowledge is out. It's available for everybody.
Okay, so let's. I'm going to talk about this weekend, and then I need to talk about one other event, and then we're going to come right back to it. This weekend, Sarah will be teaching a seminar in St. Louis. You can call 314-596-2431, or there is, Rick, do you have the 800 number right?
I do, yes.
Oh, good, thank you.
It's 1-800-522-2252. And there are the operators that are standing by right now, so you can call and register for this event on Sunday. So,
yeah, and then the other thing is that if you're listening to this, this is a virtual blog. This is my blog talk plug here. You know, I hosted radio on regular airwaves for a long time, and what is beautiful about blog talk is It's a virtual blog. So when this show is over, there will be a link. You can go to the spiritseeker.com website, click on the blog talk icon. It will take you right to my page on blog talk, and you will see this interview tonight. So you can, you know, click on it. Then you'll have the link up in your browser. If you want to forward that link to someone, they can click directly on it, and then they'll go straight there. Or you can send them to the Spirit Seeker site, and they can listen to this. Because chances are, if you're listening to this, you have other people in your life that are like, what exactly is the Kabbalah? And this has been a very enlightening interview with Sarah Yardini, who, you know, Sarah, you should be a rabbi. I mean, as much knowledge as you have in your head. I'm serious. Which rabbi is basically a teacher, a spiritual teacher. And look at the work you're doing and traveling all over the world with these teachings. How fascinating.
Thank you for having us.
Can I
bring up one real quick point of that you mentioned? Both of you talked about how there is so much support in the St. Louis Kabbalah Center locally for people that are new, that you don't come in by yourself. There are so many people that are there. And again, I've been a part of it with my wife for about 8 months now. And there's so much love and family and friendship and people that are there to answer your questions, almost like mentors that are there. And the other thing that will also happen on Sunday is we have a bookstore. And so a lot of the books that Sarah has mentioned that I've mentioned will be available for sale for people to buy. So I would recommend, you know, investigate that. And one final point. Yes, you have to take this and do a lot of this as an individual. And when I got involved with this with Heather, I kept thinking, we got to do this together. And she kept telling me, no, you need to do this on your own. And she was so right about that. And I think, again, that's from a guy's perspective of wanting our wife, our spouse, to kind of help us, lead us along, guide us, carry it by the hand. But once she kind of kept pushing me away to do this on my own, and that helped me so much doing that. So, again, a lot of support locally, and you can do this either together or with your spouse, but either way, so much of this has to come from yourself. You got to just drop the ego and take the plunge and do it.
Wow. Absolutely. And the St. Louis Kabbalah website is stlkabbalahcentre.org. And on the website, there's some wonderful information and how to get to the main website that's on, you know, how to study, meet our teacher, you know, and different information on here. And then there's some wisdom blogs. There's you can subscribe to a weekly email list, and there's just always all kinds of wonderful things. Okay, so I'm just going to do a couple of little small announcements, and then we will complete our interview. I just want to mention that Spirit Seeker is online. You can read it every single month. We have a flipbook format, but we are actually going to be updating that to where, as you're reading the magazine, if someone has a website, you'll be able to click right on the ad and go right to their webpage. I have a person coming in from out of town this weekend that is meeting and helping us take Spirit Seeker's online version to the next level. Spirit Seeker is found as a print magazine in St. Louis, Kansas City, and Chicago, but we have, you know, email, you know, website readers all across the country and now internationally. We've really been reaching a lot of people through this radio show and just people finding us through the internet. I want to mention that August 7th is our Holistic Expo. That's the 26th one of its kind. We have lectures, we have demos, we have 70 vendors. All of this information will be in the July issue of Spirit Seeker Magazine. So there you go. And then also with the show, if you've enjoyed this interview tonight, and I know you have, if you will, on Blog Talk, if you favorite the show, it helps us reach more people. The more it's favorited, we send you an email each week, you know, reminding you of the show. And then also it just brings us further to the front of the spirituality section, which just allows us to reach more people. If you want to be on the Spirit Seeker email list rather than the Blog Talk email list, all you have to do is send an email to info@spiritseeker.com and ask to be put on that. I do not sell the list. It's strictly for spiritual events such as the one this weekend and you know, people who have requested to receive information on this. Okay, so we have been interviewing Sarah Yardini and you know, Rick Bernstein, who is the local St. Louis Kabbalah person, has been on with us. The seminar is this Sunday. By all means, if you have any questions, you know, call the 800 number or call Rick. And Sarah, final words. You know, we have a couple more minutes here before all of a sudden we're complete. So I just, you know, I want to thank you, first of all. It's just been a delight, a true delight. And
you
are just an excellent teacher. So final words of wisdom with, you know, relationship with our environment, relationship with the world. What is the Kabbalah's recommendation? Or what do you feel the teachings of the Kabbalah can help us the most with our relationship to all areas of the world in our life?
Well,
that's a big question.
I know. That's a big one, but I'll answer with actually a quote from the Introduction to the Zohar by my teacher, Kabbalist Rav Berg. And that's a quote that actually I keep in my mind and I think about it every day. And that message was that misfortune and illness are not considered to be separate and apart from our thoughts, that our bodies and our thoughts, our bodies and our environments are inseparable. And that more important than taking care of the disease or the problem is to take care of the thought that created that problem. And that we have the power to heal and to remain well. And we are all connected. Every bit of every energy that goes through us, whether we express it or we don't, makes a difference in our body and in our planet. And my hope is through the teachings of the Kabbalah, the study, engaging on a spiritual path, we would be able to be more in control and put out more positive energy.
So, Sarah, if you will email me that beautiful quote, I'm going to put that on Blog Talk, and I'm going to put it on the Spirit Seeker, the Facebook, because that is beautiful.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, listeners, so we will be back again next week, 7 o'clock, same time, same location. I am interviewing Donna Gates, who is the author of Body Ecology, and you can read about this in Spirit Seeker. So thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you, Rick, and may you have a very successful Sunday. And listeners, get the word out. The more people who get there, the more community we're going to have in St. Louis, and wonderful love and support. And just thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Very much.
Good night. Good night, everyone. Okay.
I mean